Good morning. Today is Wednesday, August the 18th. Joining us this morning is Humboldt County 5th District Supervisor. We almost had him in the studio, but things changed. Steve Madrone. Good morning.
Good morning, and to all of your listeners out there in Humboldt land.
Oh, geez, I thought you were going to say, and to all, good night. One of the shortest interview programs we've had.
I'd have to be wearing my cardigan and sitting around a fireplace.
Yeah, that's right, wearing your corduroys. All righty, I've got a architectural question or a religious question. Which do you prefer?
Let's go with architect.
All right. Why is a room where guests are received and entertained sometimes called a drawing room?
Because you have to wait so long that you might as well be drawing or reading.
Yeah, nice shot. Way off, but... The room was originally called a withdrawing room, since it was one in which the guest would withdraw after dinner. Over time, it was simply abbreviated to drawing room.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Brevity.
A place for the guys to go and smoke their cigars.
Yeah, or the gals.
Yeah, well, maybe now, huh?
Yeah. Oh, geez. Hey, last time we talked, there was some discussion about some of the challenges that the rural north part of the county has as far as water, that kind of infrastructure-related stuff. Has there been any movement in that direction at all or any discussion? I mean, I know it's only been 5 or 6 weeks or so, but has there been any fruits of those discussions?
Yeah, there's a lot going on. Let's just back up just a second and point out that while about 85% of the residents of Humboldt County get their water from the Mad River via the Humboldt Bay Municipal Water District, it is also true that maybe 60-70% of the county does not get their water from that. So total number of people, yeah, 85%, but total area of Humboldt is mostly on wells, springs, stream diversions, small community service districts, and the like. And they are all experiencing very low water levels, drying out wells, and other kinds of things. So very, very big issue in the larger areas of the county, including the 5th District, which is almost half of it's northern Humboldt, right?
Yeah, by definition.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so you've got that situation. I know in talking with a number of folks, Yana's kind of the contact for us because she's on that drought, whatever.
Task force.
Thank you very much. that there's issues with a lot of the wells, certainly in the hills, some of the groundwater, things like that, that have historically been producers throughout the year that are, some of them are starting to have some issues, either lower flow or gone entirely. Is that what is being experienced now in the West Haven Trinidad area?
Well, yeah, that's always been an issue, here that in the latter part of the summer and early fall that water flows get really low and some of the wells start drying out, and it's been traditional for a number of people to buy water and have it trucked in. So there's always been kind of an issue with that over time. But the city of Trinidad is on Lufenholz Creek, and in the last 50 years, it's never dried up. It gets really low, but it actually is supplied by this amazing underground aquifer that is this uplifted marine terrace structure or geology in the Trinidad West Haven area. And there's this 200-foot thick sand layer sitting on top of what we call the Franciscan clay layer. And so when it rains, that water percolates into the ground. So what we have is a reservoir of water in Lufenholz Creek, but it's underground, which is a much better place to store it than above ground. It doesn't heat up, doesn't evaporate, doesn't grow algae. And it's that reservoir of underground water that provides a base flow to Trinidad's water supply through the summer and early fall. And when you look at the hydrograph, which is basically a graph that shows the flow of the stream, it will drop like all the streams down through May, June, et cetera. And then come July, it hits this level where it just flattens out and never dries out and stays that way all the way until the fall. And that's that base flow coming out of that underground reservoir, basically.
Now, I seem to recall, and I don't know if it's 15, 20, 25 years ago, somewhere back in that time frame, that there were issues with turbidity or mud or clay or, you know, gunk in the water, so to speak, that would happen periodically, or but on an annual basis, like maybe August, July, August, something like that, I kind of associated with the Blackberry Festival. And that at that point, there was always some, you know, you had to either strain the water, boil the water, buy water. There was that kind of thing just on a regular basis. Is that still in play, or has that changed also?
Well, yeah, what you're talking about is turbidity, and there's also tannin, which is what gets in the water from just wood and leaves getting in the water. They put a tannin into the water, which creates kind of a tea color. And so that's always been an issue in all of our creeks here in Hubble, and even the Mad River at times gets high turbidity. And that's really in the winter when we're getting heavy rainfall. That's when the water quality goes downhill. So interestingly, I've been working with the city of Trinidad as a volunteer for the last 30 years as a resident, offering my watershed expertise to try and help clean up the watershed. And we formed a watershed council about 12 years ago here locally to bring all the stakeholders together. And in the last 12 years, we've leveraged over $15 million of federal and state grants to help clean up the watershed, working with Green Diamond, other private property owners to deal with roads that were delivering sediment and reroute them, decommission them, and clean the place up. And so we implemented all that, and it was based on my thesis. I took 35 years off of school, went back to get my master's in 2009 and graduated in 2011, and I did my thesis on Lufenholz Creek to try and figure out where were the sediment sources.
Well, let's talk about that then after the break, because I suspect that we should be able to at least stretch your two-year education at least into 6 or 7 minutes.
You got it.
It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and The Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with the educated one, Mr. Steve Madrone.
Yeah, not meaning to toot my horn, but, you know, it seems relative that to your question, and that is, yes, we have been cleaning up the watershed, and the water quality has gotten much better, both in Trinidad and in West Haven, and we've made great strides in that area. And so now the real focus is on the low flows that we get in the later summer and fall, and a lot of new folks into the community are, you know, really kind of freaking out, thinking, oh my God, the creek's going to dry up. But they don't understand that's the way the creek's always been. We get dry years, we get wet years, and it never dries up because of that incredible reservoir and base flow. But it can get limited, and so what we're working on now in our communities is seeking funding to be able to assist landowners with putting together rainwater collection systems and more storage facilities on their own property for landscaping, for fire protection, things like that. So,
right.
You know, we're working on a lot of different things to try and improve our water supply.
Steve, you'd said $38 million over years?
We got about $15 million over about a 12-year period that
okay.
we pulled in.
Now, my understanding with the MAD is that there are wells below down into the bedrock, the rainy wells, which is where they draw the drinking water from. Is the water accessed out of Lufenholz, is that a surface, or is that also drilled down into the bedrock below that sand level that you were talking about, and is that where the water comes from that does carry the tannin and some of the other particulate matter that has had some people concerned over the years?
Yeah, well, surface waters are always subject to pollution, and almost all the different systems around the county are, to a large degree, considered surface waters. There are some systems that are on deeper wells. The Humboldt Bay Water District on the Mad River, the rainy wells you mentioned, are actually in the gravels. They're not in bedrock.
You're right. My mistake.
They're about 80 feet down, 50 to 80 feet down into the gravels, and they even can get subject to some amount of turbidity at times. They, in the past, had some problems, and they put in some more clarifiers, sand filters, things like that. Whereas in Trinidad, the intakes are, maybe 10 feet deep down into the gravels. And, yeah, there's surface water. And so what I've been doing in my thesis, I identified that there was these springs way upslope that are where the water first filters through the sand and emerges when it hits that Franciscan clay. And so I'm recommending that the city tap those in the winter, because they not only come out really pure with hardly any treatment needed other than some chlorination, but you could have a redundant line for small hydro and actually produce the energy you need to run the plant. So we're going to be investigating that over the next year, along with groundwater recharge, rainwater collection, and lots of other things to try and help our community become more water resilient.
So as you look at some of those challenges, you know, over this period of time, obviously legalization has also occurred. Is there any impact at all from marijuana grows in that region that are taking some of the additional water off, or not siphoning off? That's the wrong word, but you get the gist of what I'm going for.
Yeah, you know, luckily in our Lufenholz area, there really are not significant cannabis operations.
Okay.
There's certainly a small-scale, individual, personal use cultivation happening here and there, but there is no large-scale stuff like so many other watersheds around Humboldt County.
So that's really not a factor then to be concerned
about. That is not a factor.
Okay.
The real factors are, you know, when you cut the forest, if you clear cut and you bring in this really young stand of trees, every one of those trees is a pump, right? And so it's pulling water out of the ground, evapotranspirating it. So one of the ways you can increase your base flows is doing selective thinning, not clear cutting, but selective thinning from below, limbing, thinning, and moving the trees into an older stand, and that actually conserves more water in the ground.
Right, kind of like a rotational harvest.
Absolutely, absolutely, that kind of stuff. And you know, a lot of the work is moving that way, and Green Diamond's done some great work to clean up their roads. We've seen reduced turbidity thanks to that cooperation, and so there's a lot of really good things we can do to try and be more water resilient and literally live within our means, unlike, say, the town of Mendocino on the coast of Mendocino that overgrew beyond its means and has been trucking water in for years in the summer and fall because they overbuilt.
Right,
you know,
right.
So we're trying not to go that rate and overbuild and then get into a problem.
Or if you do have those growth desires, you plan for it.
You do plan for it. That's exactly right.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like it's rocket science, but it does seem to be something that escapes a lot of folks periodically, which I guess that kind of leads to some of the different frustrations that people have. So right now, Trinidad, West Haven is okay, kind of making it through, but certainly makes it challenging if anybody's looking to do any kind of new development there.
Yeah, it's always been a constraint on development, and that's exactly why Trinidad and West Haven are the rural, rustic communities they are. You know, when the new people have been moving into town and they're desperate to get that pipeline from the Mad River, I ask them, I said, so why did you move here? And they say, oh, because it's so rustic and rural and beautiful. I'm like, bingo. That's because of limited water and limited sewage capacity, right? So if you change those things, if you bring in unlimited water, you start increasing development and things start changing. So we're trying to help the community understand those relationships between water availability and growth and maintaining the rural character that we have
kind of
with
like,
moderate growth.
Yeah,
you know?
Informed decisions.
Yes,
concept.
Well, imagine that.
All right, well, we'll work on that one too during the break. It's 8:30.
Forgetting I'm president.
This
is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It is 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Steve Madrone. Steve, considering some of the different options, as his supervisor, you guys were going to be getting together in person and, you know, start to say hi to everybody and, you know, touch bases again. How much of a hindrance is going back to the Zoom and the mask and all that stuff going to be? Obviously, there's a mental component to that as well as the actual physical stuff. Is it going to be perceived differently this time, or is it, hey, we've already won this battle before, we can do it again?
Well, we never actually shifted off of Zoom. We were prepared to on August 10th at our last meeting, but we didn't because of the surge that's happening. And one of the supervisors actually came down with COVID. And
yeah, so Rexy. Yeah.
We've had to lock down in the building for 10 days and all that. But, you know, the thing is that Zoom has its pros and its cons, right? I mean, it helps those that live way out in the rural areas be able to participate without dedicating a whole day to come into Eureka to do that. So for those that have the technology and the ability to, you know, navigate Zoom, it increases participation. But not everybody has computers and internet, and so they can call in, but, you know, it gets complicated. So there are negatives and there are positives, and when we switch, we were hoping to try and do some kind of a hybrid,
right,
where
right.
we'd be in person, but people could still call in so that we could keep that increased participation happening.
Well, that's why I wanted to ask, the fifth, probably, you know, the fifth and the second would have it most often. There's a lot of areas that don't have, let's call it high speed and put that in quotes.
Yep.
Internet connectivity options.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so those folks now are really X'd out. I mean,
they
can't attend the meeting. It's not practical for them, even if they have the time available, to be able to approach in that fashion.
Yeah.
Does that make it more challenging for you and for Michelle to be able to somehow represent those perspectives if the system, so to speak, is focusing on Zoom rather than on good old fashioned see somebody's baby blues?
Yeah, no, it does create complications, and I think that's why we as supervisors get out into our districts as much as we do, especially in the three rural ones, you know, to make contact with our constituents and give them access. I'm going to be restarting my office hours out in Willow Creek, Hoopa, and Orleans. Once things settle back down again, hopefully.
Oh, my God. Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. Oh.
So, you know, we're working through it, right, all together, and it is mentally draining, no doubt about it, on everybody.
Yeah, yeah. And anytime we can think, boy, we're getting hammered, all you have to do is think about our buddies over in Trinity County. They got it around them, and, yeah, it just so there's not – while we have empathy, there may not be a lot of sympathy compared to others. So as you look at that, does that mean that it is it? What are the opportunities that this provides us? Burnout, I think, is more and more of a factor for people. Call it stress, or call it whatever you want. But
sure.
You know, what is it? A chicken by any other feed is still a chicken?
Yeah. No, we all have a lot of work to do to maintain our mental and physical health right now. We've never really experienced all this, right? So it does come down to trying to really focus on what you need to do to maintain all of that. We got a long way to go to get our fiber accessible. There's actually a ton of internet fiber laid in the county to a lot of schools that nobody can access because of certain rules. But that's just crazy because people are working from home. Students are still trying to do their studies from home. So, you know, we need to increase that access, that last mile, as they say.
Kind of like a community center perspective?
Certainly, that is helpful. Wherever those exist, those are a great, great thing. And,
well,
you know,
school,
some of those are called granges.
Yeah, no, I was thinking
that's
like
a
the
whole
school.
Other issue.
The school kind of functioning is that.
Yeah.
You know, so that, you know, maybe, okay, whoever it is or everybody pays as they go kind of thing shows up in the auditorium after school hours or after the kids are off campus, can be used as a community hub, I guess is what they're called.
Access point, yeah.
Pretty straightforward, pretty simple. You pay $5 or the city or whoever the jurisdiction is, gives them a couple bucks a month, and okay, that's what we're going to use it for and kind of get the community back into the schools.
That's an excellent concept and one we absolutely ought to be looking into more because not everybody has fiber at their house or satellite or whatever.
Right. So, the creativity is there, but typically born out of necessity. Well, we've been necessity for the last 12 months, 18 months or whatever it's been. So I would think that some of that creative juice now just needs to be reinvigorated because it's been kind of spent.
It does. And, you know, the old adage of you can lead a horse to water with carrots a lot better than a whip still applies. And so what this whole drought and water scarcity thing is doing is the mother invention. We're all going to be, I predict that in not too long, most of us will be collecting rainwater and storing some at our own places so that we have more resiliency and more reliability for fighting fire and or whatever. What we need to do, and we've been talking with Senator McGuire and Assemblyman Wood about further incentivizing rainwater collection, water storage, and these kinds of things. So there's some progress starting to happen on that.
Makes it kind of interesting, doesn't it, sometimes?
That's for sure. It's not boring right now.
Yeah. Ain't that the truth. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:42.
Hey, folks. Flying local is buying local. And with three airlines serving five destinations, Humboldt County has more choices than ever. Fly on American, Avelo, or United Airlines. We have service to Denver, Hollywood Burbank, LAX, Phoenix, and San Francisco airports. Now's the time to book and save on that getaway. Or have friends and family fly to visit the beautiful Redwood Coast. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org. Fly Humboldt, more flights to more destinations.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It is 8:43. We're back talking shop this morning with Humboldt County Supervisor Steve Madrone. Steve, looking at some of the different challenges that are out there, we've got the state stuff that's going on. We've got some of these fundings going on. Different. And then we've got all the natural challenges that are appearing in front of us. What is number one on your list right now?
Well, number one on my list right now is making sure that the folks of Eastern Humboldt County are getting what they need to be prepared. Well, first of all, to deal with the smoke and evacuation that's already happening in Western Trinity, our neighbors. But also, being prepared because this fire is, as many say, is sort of a sleeping dragon lying in the cave. And every now and then it puffs a big cloud of smoke and some fire out. What that means is that the fire is laid down right now because there's no wind. And that's great, but all it takes is for that wind to pick up and stir or change directions for things to get pretty serious pretty quickly. So we are not out of the woods, as they say, yet. And so that's really top on my agenda right now, is doing anything I can to try and help that community be prepared and to deal with what's already happening. You know, every summer it seems like people just really get hammered by the smoke. I'm trying to see if we can get some funds to get some box fans, filters to people out there, and just be prepared. Beyond that, the ongoing water crisis, with the drought, trying to make sure people have the water they need, figuring out new incentives to be able to make that happen. So one of the ways is when people are putting in water storage facilities, not taxing them as a property improvement, right? So there are ways that we can incentivize doing this. And so we're looking at that in the various laws and tax codes and things and figuring out, how can we further incentivize that so that we're more prepared as the next dry years come around?
So is that running through the building department?
Building department, planning. Well, planning. I'm working with the planners quite a bit on this stuff, along with Supervisor Bushnell. And both of us are on the cannabis ad hoc. But it's beyond cannabis. I mean, yes, there's a lot of need for cannabis farmers to store water, but it really is all of us at some level or another trying to figure out how to increase our water resiliency.
Totally unrelated question. You ready?
You bet.
I don't know why I'm warning you about it. The ADA work that we're seeing along the coast, is there need also in Eastern Humboldt and Northern Humboldt for the ADA work? Was that pointed out, or because there's not that many sidewalks, there's not that much a need in those areas or the prevalency?
Well, it has to happen in facilities as well as on the ground, on streets, right? So there is a long list. There's much that's been done by our county crew, and bless their soul for all the hard work they've been doing. But there's a lot more to do with that still. And then there's also, as you say, sidewalks, curbs, et cetera. And there are plenty of those in some of the Willow Creek areas and other remote areas of the county. And so we have been actively modifying those curbs and putting in the curb cuts and the waffle board slip stuff. And, you know, there's a lot going on all over the county. There's certainly a lot more work to do.
Well, the reason I was thinking about Eastern Humboldt, because you got 299 and 96, which are Caltrans.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's Caltrans' responsibility is kind of what my presumption is.
That's right.
And then on the reservation, well, that's not the county's responsibility for the roads and stuff, so that would be tribal if, in fact, it still qualifies. So I just didn't know if there was that much.
Actually, we have roads in Hoopa that are county responsibility.
Really? On the reservation?
Yes, off the highway there are county roads, and we have responsibility for some of those. That was new for me to learn. But there are a lot of sidewalks, actually, in Willow Creek off of 299 on Country Club Drive.
Right, the neighborhoods.
By the post office and the schools there.
Out McIntosh.
As well as out in the Terrace neighborhood and others. But you're right. I mean, it's limited. You know, sidewalks are very limited in the rural areas.
Yeah, well, I guess there's another reason why.
That's right. They're rural.
Yeah, exactly. It's all part of it.
So, that's right.
You've got a couple of different major projects that are out there that are getting your attention. What about a small one? What's an easy one that isn't philosophical? I mean, you know, you're really not going to be able to stop the fire. You're really not going to be able to take care of the drought situation as one guy doing battle. What's a project that you've got that you're hoping to get squared up this summer that is a Steve can do this as Steve project?
Well, you know, of the Trail Stewards program around Humboldt County, a lot of these volunteers that show up to maintain all these new trails that are getting built with the county and with the cities. And so the Humboldt Trails Council has formed a Trails Stewards program, and that helps coordinate volunteers, people in the community that want to help, you know, take care of things. And so in McKinleyville, we've been working with the Mi'kmaq and some other businesses, and we're hoping to replicate that with some of the roads. You know, our roads department has taken a huge hit over the years, ever since Prop 13, and we've never gotten back to the, you know, we've got half the staff we used to have. And then we had SWAP. We had tons and tons of people working in the Sheriff's Work Alternative Program, but that got shut down during COVID because nobody was being sentenced to jail time. So SWAP is a diversion program, right? So we lost all that, and so our roadside brush is just growing like crazy all over the place, and so we're seeking funding to deal with that. But one of the pieces of the solution is to replicate the Trail Stewards with Road Stewards, where we get together and we help the county. They bring the equipment, the safety mechanisms and signs, and we bring people together and we start helping out. I mean, when you look at what's going on with funding and everything else in this world, you can complain about it and post on Facebook and bitch and moan and on, but at the end of the day, when things get done, it's because people step up and start helping make them happen. So it's a little thing, but it's a big thing, right? And so that's something we're working on in McKinleyville.
So with the steward or the trail program, I would suspect that there's got to be some forms that have to be signed just because of liability or workers' comp or the equivalent of that kind of stuff. That tends to get ironed out when new programs like this come up?
Yeah, they absolutely do. What happens is our partners are nonprofits that have general liability insurance, and people sign a waiver form and sign up as volunteers, and that covers all that, and it creates an incredible asset to the county to help us get the work done that the community wants to see happen. And, you know, before the Trail Stewards came along, we were pretty constrained on adding any new trails after the Hammond Trail because we just didn't have the ability to operate and maintain them. So with the advent of the Trail Stewards from the Humboldt Trails Council, that has really given us the ability to expand our trail network and take on more and more projects. And people love doing it.
So, all righty, Steve. Hang in there. Thanks for the time.
Thank you. Take care.
All righty. See everybody tomorrow.